The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Coming up in the second segment, we'll update you on the response to the Key of David UK, the program, the TV program right here in the UK region, and also get to one of your emails. So keep them coming in, td@kpcg.fm. Well, the New York Times is alarmed by Russia's reliance on false stories and disinformation to carry out its foreign policy objectives. The headline in today's edition of the New York Times, a powerful Russian weapon, the spread of false stories. This is a powerful weapon that Vladimir Putin uses. Spreading false stories, propaganda, misinformation. It says here that planting of false stories is nothing new. The Soviet Union devoted considerable resources to that during the ideological battles of the Cold War. Now, though, disinformation is regarded as an important aspect of Russian military doctrine, and it's being directed at political debates in target countries with far greater sophistication and volume than in the past. This is a development that, as the Times brings out, it's alarming. It's alarming. Now, this is the same organization, the New York Times. It's the same publication that featured a story less than 4 months ago about the Obama administration manufacturing a false narrative to ramrod the Iran nuclear deal down America's throat, and really thought that this was something worth praising. I mean, this was innovative. This was sophisticated. This was skillful. You look at the tone of both articles, the one that was printed today about Russia spreading false stories, and the one that hit the front page in, May the 5th? It was the New York Times Review, as I recall, the Sunday publication associated with the New York Times paper. But still, the same organization. And just examine the tone of both articles. It tells you everything you need to know about what's wrong with journalism today. It exposes a radical left-wing bias. I mean, here, this is the worst foreign policy blunder in U.S. history. And it was brought on by a pack of lies. It was built right on top of false stories and disinformation. Let me remind you what the New York Times had to say less than 4 months ago. Watching Ben Rhodes work, they wrote, I remember that he's still chiefly a writer who's using a new set of tools along with the traditional arts of narrative and spin. So these are new tools that the Obama administration is making use of to produce spin, to, quote, create stories of great consequence on the biggest page imaginable. It says the narratives he frames, the voices of senior officials, the columnists and reporters whose work he skillfully shapes and ventriloquizes, and even the president's own speeches and talking points are the only dots of color in a much larger vision about who Americans are and where we're going that Rhodes and the president have been formulating together over the past 7 years. It says here, when I asked John Favreau, Obama's lead speechwriter in the 2008 campaign, and a close friend of Rhodes, whether he or Rhodes or the president had ever thought of their individual speeches and bits of policymaking as part of some larger restructuring of the American narrative, he replied, "We saw that as our entire job." Well, our entire job was about restructuring the American narrative. In the case of Rhodes and what he did with the Iran nuke deal, well, he was just making use of a new set of tools. Skillfully using these tools to create this believable narrative, one that was entirely false. False stories. That's what they are out there doing, spreading false stories. That's the headline today in the New York Times about Vladimir Putin, about this powerful Russian weapon. Quoting from today's piece, "The fundamental purpose of Russian disinformation is to undermine the official version of events." That's the purpose of Russia. Russia's misinformation or disinformation. It's to undermine the official version. It's to reshape the narrative, in other words. Now the Ben Rhodes story from May. It says in the narrative that Rhodes shaped the story, quote unquote, of the Iran deal began in 2013 when a quote-unquote moderate faction inside the Iranian regime led by Hassan Rouhani beat regime quote-unquote hardliners in an election that then began to pursue a policy of quote-unquote openness, which included a newfound willingness to negotiate the dismantling of its illicit nuclear weapons program. In that one sentence I just read to you, the New York Times put quotes around the words story, moderate, hardliners, and openness. This was the fiction that they wrote, that they created, the false story the Obama administration put out there, that the moderates beat the hardliners, and the moderates were now open to negotiating in 2013. And so the Obama administration seized upon that opportunity. It was brought on by events. Events that never really happened. A false narrative from the beginning. That story in May, it says here, the president set out the timeline himself in a speech announcing the nuke deal on July 14, 2015. "Today," this is quoting President Obama, "today, after 2 years of negotiations, the United States, together with our international partners, has achieved something that decades of animosity has not." And then the New York Times says, "While the president's statement was technically accurate, there had in fact been 2 years of formal negotiations leading up to the signing of the JCPOA. It was also actively misleading because the most meaningful part of the negotiations with Iran had begun in mid-2012, many months before Rouhani and the so-called moderate camp were chosen in an election among candidates handpicked by Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini. The idea that there was a new reality in Iran was politically useful to the Obama administration." Notice the phrases used throughout. New set of tools, skillfully shaping the story, formulating together this narrative, restructuring the American narrative. And then this story, this misleading story, well, it was politically useful to the Obama administration. It wasn't dangerous. It's not alarming. In this case, in the case of the Obama administration, the end justifies the means. And so if they promote a false story or spread a false story, as long as it leads to an outcome that fits comfortably in the left-wing agenda, this is just skillful. Innovative. These are the words used in the the May article. In the article today, it says, although the topics may vary, the goal is the same, Mr. Lindbergh and others suggested. What the Russians are doing is building narratives. They are not building facts. That's what the New York Times says today about Russian propaganda. Well, they're just building narratives. They're not building facts. They're not basing these arguments on truth. They're out there building narratives. From May 5th, the tone here, a little bit different. Rhodes' innovative campaign to sell the Iran deal is likely to be a model for how future administrations explain foreign policy to Congress and the public. This is an innovative campaign, you see. And it's likely to be the future model. How administrations in the U.S. government explain foreign policy. It says here, the way in which most Americans have heard the story of the Iran deal presented, that the Obama administration began seriously engaging with Iranian officials in 2013 in order to take advantage of a new political reality in Iran, which came about because of elections that brought moderates to power in that country, was largely manufactured for the purpose of selling the deal. Largely manufactured for the purpose of selling the deal. The worst foreign policy blunder in America's history. And it was brought on by this manufactured story, created solely to sell the deal. It says, even where the particulars of that story are true, the implications that readers and viewers are encouraged to take away from those particulars are often misleading or false. Totally manufactured. The particulars even, misleading, false. And yet this is nothing to be alarmed about. This is not something that should be considered dangerous. It's a new approach to foreign policy in the White House. It's innovative. And Rhodes, really, if you study the tone of that May article, he's praised. He's praised for using this new set of tools. And you quote Rhodes himself in the article where he's, as we've said so many times, he was there bragging about how that they propped it up on lies. Switching back to the article today, whatever the method or message, Russia clearly wants to win any information war. As Dmitry Kislyev, Russia's most famous television anchor and the director of the organization that runs Sputnik, made clear recently. It quotes him then, as saying, speaking this summer on the 75th anniversary of the Soviet Information Bureau, Mr. Kislyev said the age of neutral journalism was over. If we do propaganda, he said, then you do propaganda too. That's the message that he directed to Western journalists. And who could argue with that? I mean, there's one of the most famous television anchors in Russia, all but admitting that we do propaganda. But where do you see that same admission coming from the government of the United States? Or if you do, as we read about in the month of May, I mean, it's something seen as praiseworthy, certainly not anything that's dangerous or alarming. We truly do, though, as he said there. We live in the age of propaganda. Neutrality is gone. That's what just makes the trumpet.com and the monthly magazine, as I've been drawing attention to of late, these stories, all of this analysis in each edition, posted at the website, talked about on the Key of David, It's crucial. It's crucial. Jesus said to watch and to pray always. Watch world events. And really, I mean, if you're going to the wrong news sources, you're not even going to be able to watch. You won't see what we should be seeing, because there's just so many lies. There's so much disinformation. There's so many false stories being peddled. Watch and pray always. Stay grounded in the truth. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." Well, following on, it ties in here, as you can see. This is the story about Iran deploying long-range missiles to its Fordo nuclear site. This is reported on at the Times of Israel. "Protecting nuke facilities is paramount," says Iran air commander, as state TV airs images of Russian-made S-300 launchers. Israel, of course, is dead set against this. You know the story. When sanctions were lifted, when the announcement was made that they had agreed to the terms back in July of last year, then the floodgates opened and all these new arms deals were made between Russia and Iran, including these S-300 launchers. It says here in the article, "Tehran has deployed a recently delivered Russian-made long-range missile system to central Iran to protect its Fordo nuclear facility," state television said Sunday. "Protecting nuclear facilities is paramount in all circumstances," quoting this Iranian general. It says, "Today, Iran's sky is one of the most secure in the region," bragging again about the strength of its defenses now. A video showed an S-300 carrier truck in Fordo raising its missile launchers toward the sky next to other counterstrike weaponry. The images were aired hours after Supreme Leader, the Ayatollah, gave a speech to Air Force commanders. And then later it says, in 2010, Russia froze a deal to supply the system to Iran, linking the decision to UN sanctions instituted because of Tehran's nuclear program. Putin lifted the suspension in July 2015 following Iran's deal with six world powers that curbed its nuclear program in exchange for relief from international sanctions. And this whole deal, as I just mentioned, this whole deal was sold on a lie. Sold on a lie. And then adding to that, all of this missile defense surrounding the Fordo facility, as Brett Stevens tweeted last night, wasn't the nuke deal supposed to render Fordo harmless? Why do they need this defense? Why do they need all these missiles to protect this nuclear facility? Well, there's nothing nefarious going on there, is there? That's what we've been told. That's the story that's been spreading. It's a harmless facility now because of this nuke deal. In fact, these missiles now surrounding this facility, it reveals Iran's true intentions. Says a lot about what's going on in those facilities and how important it is for Iran to prepare itself for a possible strike coming from Israel. Probably only Israel at this point. It was supposed to be a nuke deal that prevented Iran from having any path to a nuclear weapon. And here they are surrounding these sites now with the S-300 launchers. Well, go back. Go back to that January article from my father, "The Worst Foreign Policy Blunder in American History," and then think about it in connection with the Ben Rhodes story from the month of May. And how, I mean, this article in the New York Times today talks about how important it is for Russia to spread false stories and disinformation in order to carry out its foreign policy objectives, even its military doctrine. And then think about the Obama administration. And then think about Obama's foreign policy And then think about President Obama's military doctrine. How important is it for this administration to spread false stories to meet its objectives? The worst foreign policy blunder in American history. It's leading to Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. That's what my father wrote about in that article from January. Great tribulation is coming, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. God's going to have to intervene to shorten those days. Otherwise, we'd wipe ourselves out. My father says here, from January, the Iran deal contains bad news and good news. The bad news is that Iran is now capable of triggering World War III. The good news is that Jesus Christ will return to stop mankind from annihilating itself. One last story here on this internet giveaway. It was talked about last week, I believe, on Trumpet Hour. But this from the Wall Street Journal, it says, when the Obama administration, here again, think about this story, or as you listen to this story, think about all the promises, think about all of the assurances, think about the stories, the narratives, think about everything that we've just discussed. It says, when the Obama administration announced its plan to give up U.S. protection of the internet, it promised the United Nations would never take control. Well, this is, okay, we're giving this up, this right, but be assured, the UN's not going to gain control of it, the Wall Street Journal says today, but because of the administration's naivete or arrogance, UN control is the likely result if the U.S. gives up internet stewardship, as planned at midnight on September 30th. Well, you can go back and run a Google search on really the stories from the past couple of years on this. A Bloomberg piece from back in 2014 talking about the U.S. giving up its control of the free speech internet over to this organization based in L.A., the Internet Corp Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. They were left with the charge to manage the domain system and the names and such for websites. But, as was reported a couple of years ago, it operated, ultimately, under a contract from the U.S. Department of Commerce. Although it never exercised this right or even threatened to do so, the U.S. could always still render a website nameless, making it hard to find, essentially kicking it off the internet. In other words, the U.S. had control, even with it outsourced, to this ICANN, is the acronym. Well, now it's basically ending its contract at the end of September, giving total control to this ICANN. And, let me just continue reading in the Wall Street Journal. Rick Manning, president of the Americans for Limited Government, called it simply stunning that the politically blinded Obama administration missed the obvious point that ICANN loses its antitrust shield should the government relinquish control. It's a little bit of a complicated story, but as I say, you can read a few stories through a Google search and be brought up to speed. Essentially, if the government gives up this contract or the control over this ICANN, the ICANN loses its antitrust, and it would have to seek it from some other organization like the UN. And so the Wall Street Journal is saying here today, despite the assurances from Obama, here we are in a situation where the United Nations could very much come in and have the control over the ICANN. Not on all the content on the internet, but again, you can only see, as Ted Cruz and some others have been warning, how that this just gives an open door to countries like Russia and China, who are not concerned at all about free speech. To this point, I mean, America has been able to control everything about it. And yet in recent years, you see it just sacrificing a little bit of that control here and there. What a gateway. We talk a lot about sea gates and the fact that the United States and Britain, they were prophesied to give up those crucial sea lanes. And here you have the United States of America with total control over this information superhighway, and now it's just giving it up little by little. This piece at the WSJ says it was always nice to have the U.S. standing in the background as silent muscle. Well, let me just back up a bit. It says no country, this is from the Bloomberg piece from 2014, no country other than the U.S. gets to decide what idea deserves a web address. And while U.S. policies and practices in other cyber realms have been less than stellar, it has been an outstanding protector of free speech on the Internet. I mean, this is something that's especially unique to the United States of America. Free speech! It says power can exist even when it isn't exercised or even visible. The Commerce Department has ensured the growth of a lively commercial Internet in the same way the European Union thrived, in part under the protective umbrella of all those American tanks waiting to roll into the Fulda Gap. Then finally it says, it was always nice to have the U.S. standing in the background as silent muscle. Now that muscle has packed up and gone home. The Internet won't end next year, but it will start to change, and that's what we're seeing. Some pretty significant changes to the Internet and those who control that information superhighway. But coming back to the Obama administration's assurances, as another article brought out, so much for this pledge coming from President Obama that the U.S. would never be replaced by some other government-led organization or intergovernment organization. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Over the weekend, our television program here in the UK, which plays all across the UK and also in Ireland on quite a few households, I should say. The program is the Wonderful World Tomorrow Here Today. We mentioned this a little bit on the last program last week. But it advertised the Wonderful World Tomorrow book by Herbert Armstrong and also my father's book, The God Family Vision. I think after a year and a half, that's the first time that we've offered The God Family Vision over the air. And it brought in 132 requests for both of those books, 132 for those two books by Herbert Armstrong and my father. This next week, well, actually, it escapes my memory all of a sudden. Or Raising the Ruins, that's what we're advertising. That's going to be playing this week. It'll be posted on Friday, a program that will advertise Raising the Ruins, which I don't think we've advertised here since about January, so it's been about 7-8 months. An email here from Canada. about the God family culture. We've been talking a fair bit about family and the father's role here in recent programs. And this one here says, we recently purchased an FM transmitter and download the podcast to my phone using the Podcast Addict app, which we found out about from a letter you read on the show. That was news to me when I read that letter about the Podcast Addict, but apparently some of you are looking into that. I'll have to look into it myself to see how it works. It says, we enjoy using this to listen to the TD and other KPCG programming in the car. I've been meaning to write for some weeks now. I've been trying to think of how to express how thankful we are for the TD and other KPCG programming. The TD is a perfect source of news through the lens of God's Word, as well as constant instruction on living a God family culture life. Living a God family culture life. It says, after having both attended AC for 4 years, we certainly miss the culture on campus. The peaceful landscapes, beautiful buildings, spectacular concerts, inspiring lectures, and friendly people. It says, but so much of that has been made available to us all through God's work. We will still always miss being on the campus, but the way God is using technology for His work is an astounding blessing. Every day, we can fill our home with God's culture. As we watch the world falling apart, God certainly knows how to comfort and to teach His people. That's what God's work, of course, is here working to build, this God family culture, the world tomorrow, here today in the form of godly families scattered throughout this dark world. It is, as Paul said in Galatians 1 and verse 4, an evil world. But we should praise God, as it also says in that same passage, that God has brought us out. He's called us out of this evil world. And that small beginning, that mustard seed beginning, it's the very beginning of a new and different world that will eventually fill the earth, the surface of this earth. Last week, as I said, I spent a fair bit of time on the father's role in the home, and for what little time I have left on today's program, I'd like to focus in more on the mother's role, the wife's role in the home, in the family. A couple of years ago, Pew Research released a report saying that women are now the primary providers in a record 40% of U.S. households with children. Homes or families with children. And you have approaching 50%, half of the homes, you have a woman as the primary provider, the breadwinner. The report here found that mothers are either the primary or sole breadwinner in 4 out of 10 households with children under the age of 18, compared to just 11% of families in 1960. What a dramatic change in just 50, 55, 56 years. 11%, now it's up to 40. A few bits from this study. In 2011, nearly 6 in 10 married couples with children had 2 incomes, up from a quarter in 1960. The share in which the father's the breadwinner and the mother's the homemaker, by contrast, has fallen from about 70% in 1960 to 31%. These are some dramatic changes in the traditional family, in the institution of family. Pew says here, about 3/4 of adults, that's 74%, say the increasing number of women working for pay has made it harder for parents to raise children. And half say that it has made marriages harder to succeed. And so these have been the fruits. I mean, this is the reality of these dramatic changes in the family. Those who now at least are honest enough to admit, you know, it makes it harder for us to raise children. It makes it harder for our marriages to work. And as you well know, I could cite a number of other studies showing that in far too many cases, the marriages don't work. They don't work out. They split apart. And then new marriages or step marriages, step families are formed. But here people acknowledge that this social transformation, and that's what it has been. They acknowledge that it makes it harder to raise children and to make marriages work, and yet the direction, I mean, it keeps going in the direction it's going. Well, as I say, this was a study from 2 years ago. And when that did come out, it was interesting. Most of these examples here, I think, were on Fox News, but there's also another commenter or two. But a lot of the male commentators spoke up when these figures were first released. Lou Dobbs on Fox News said it was troubling, these statistics. He said, we're watching society dissolve around us. I mean, what kind of society do we have when you have these percentages and then people openly acknowledging, look, it's made it so much harder for the family to work. It's made it so much harder for the marriage to succeed. This should be in large letters on the front page of every newspaper in America. Juan Williams said that. He's not exactly a conservative staple on that network. He comes from the liberal wing. You're seeing the disintegration of marriage, he said. Marriage is disintegrating. You're seeing something going terribly wrong in American society, and it's hurting our children, and it's going to have an impact for generations to come. And so we're doing something. These voices came forward to say, we're doing something that's hurting our families. That's hurting our children. And so what do? Do we stop? Do we stop with the trends that have been ongoing since the 1960s? Or do we just carry on and pretend like, well, those aren't really the facts? The truth is that women have been liberated. The truth is, they'll say, I'll get to the other side here in just a second. The truth is that a single mom can do just as well as a husband and wife can do together. Eric Erickson, he's another one, conservative commentator. He came forward in some interviews talking about how the typical male dominant role, as he put it, with the female role serving in more of a complementary but not competitive way. He said, we've lost the ability to have complementary relationships in nuclear families, and it's tearing us apart. He's commenting on this survey from 2014. He said, what I find interesting in the survey is that 3/4 of the people surveyed recognized that having moms as the primary breadwinner is bad for kids and bad for marriages. And reality shows us that's the truth. That's the truth, he said. Well, the politicians won't say it. That's what Juan Williams had to say about Eric Erickson's pretty strong comments. The politicians won't say it. And, well, Erickson said it. He had the courage to say it. Another commentator, Doug Schoen, he agreed with Juan Williams. He said, this is a catastrophic issue, and sadly no one on the left, right, or center is dealing with the breakdown of family structure. We're losing a generation. See, everyone involved in this particular panel discussion that I just gave you some excerpts from. Lou Dobbs chimed in, Juan Williams from the left, Eric Erickson from the right, Doug Schoen. They all said this is a crisis. And, well, how do you suppose the very powerful women on Fox News took to these discussions? Greta Van Susteren said, have these men lost their minds? Have these men lost their minds? Are these my colleagues? Are these really my colleagues? Megyn Kelly spoke with Eric Erickson about that particular panel discussion. And she opened her interview with Erickson saying, "What makes you dominant and me submissive? And who died and made you scientist-in-chief? You have your study, I have mine. Who made you God? Who are you to say male dominant and female submissive?" And can you guess what happened next? All the men, the big tough men, that sounded tough for a moment, they started to backpedal. Erickson said, "Well, it was certainly poorly constructed how I said it." They started to backpedal. Erickson had written this: "Kids most likely will do best in households where they have a mom at home nurturing them while dad is bringing home the bacon." That's what he had written previous to this discussion with Megyn Kelly. And Kelly's response to that statement, which I just read: "I didn't like what you wrote one bit, and I do think you are judging people. I don't like what you said." She said further, "Why are we supposed to take your word for it? Eric Erickson science instead of all of these experts? Why should we take your word for it?" That was the response. And the men very quickly backed down. And life moves on. We're 2 years on from it now, and I suppose the percentages are continuing in the wrong direction. And maybe every once in a while you'll have someone speak up and talk about the crisis in the family and the fact that people are acknowledging it makes it harder. People are acknowledging that it's ruining marriages. And even still, we just have to turn a blind eye to it and go along with the conventional wisdom and go along with the way the family's organized today, even though it's so dramatically different than it was even a half century ago, and pretend as if all of these effects that are all around us have nothing to do with this social transformation. Isaiah 3 tells us. It tells us what's happened. God prophesied of this. But following on what Eric Erickson said, I mean, what does the Bible say about the roles in the home? That's what he should have stuck to. Stick to your guns and point out what the teachings of Jesus have to say, and point out what the Apostle Paul and the Apostle Peter were inspired to write. I mean, we've got to come back to the Bible as our foundation. Without that as our foundation, what do we have to stand on? What do we have to build on? Psalm 127 says, unless God builds the house, unless he builds it, we're going to be out there laboring in vain, trying to build it and construct it in some way according to what the popular trends are of today, or the psychologists or the experts or the scientists. That's what man's been doing. He's just been going about doing what seems right. This seems right. Oh, now this seems right. Oh, well, we're in 2016. These are different times. This seems right. Unless the Lord builds the house, the laborers are just going to be out there working in vain. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3 says, "But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God." Whoa, a woman can't submit to a man. Well, then tear it all apart. Well, a man can't submit to Christ. Well, Christ can't submit to God. And so the whole form, the whole order of things, the whole structure is just turned on its head. And then we carry on, and disaster results, and people start to acknowledge the disaster. And still, we persist in our stubborn ways, resisting against the order and the structure that God outlined from the beginning. In the absence of godly authority, You have confusion. You have disagreement. You have anarchy. You have an upside-down society. Someone has to lead. And that verse I just read to you, it highlights submission for the man's role just as much as it does for the woman. Submit. Man hates that word. We're hostile to God's government. Romans 8:7. But the fact is, the head of every man is Jesus Christ. And the head of the woman is that God-fearing man who submits to Jesus Christ. Now, there's instruction the Bible also gives to us with respect to, you know, someone that's perhaps married to an individual, a husband, let's say, who's not a God-fearing man, not a member of God's church. That's a separate study. We can get into that some other time, I suppose. But for now, just look at the way God has organized a household. Verse 7, this is 1 Corinthians 11, says, "For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is in the image and the glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man." She's there to reflect the man's glory. And again, you read this to a powerful female commentator today, and they're going to shout you down and run you off the set and try to destroy your career. It wasn't even that long ago. 40, 50 years, like that survey brings out. Well, a book I was just reading on Ronald Reagan the other day. He marries Nancy Reagan. I forget the exact day. I think it was in the early 1950s, 52, 53. She was an actress too. She had a fair bit of popularity too. I mean, Reagan's career at that point as an actor was on the downhill slide. But her acting career effectively ended the day she married Ronald Reagan, because as this author brings out, her objective from that point forward was to further and to support her husband's career. That's not going to fly in this modern age. I mean, she was even ridiculed back then to some extent. How much worse would it be today? That's 60 years ago. And it's because society back then was a little bit closer to that Bible form. It was breaking down in a hurry. Herbert Armstrong highlights this in God Speaks Out on the New Morality. He was right ahead of his time, telling you, telling me, where this upside down family was leading, where this new morality, this swing to the new morality, where it was leading. It was leading to the destruction of our society, he said. And so here is where we are today. You've got pushing near to half the households in the United States with the mother as the breadwinner, with the mother off pursuing the career. And what about the family? And what about the role of the husband? And what about the children? Here you have people now even acknowledging, by a large majority, that this social transformation, it's not working. It's hurting marriages. It's hurting families. And to even acknowledge this in a commentating format, it gets you pretty well shouted down. 1 Corinthians 11:8, "For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man." Here again, God's emphasizing the order of the family. The order of the family, and yet the two working together with the same opportunity, spiritually speaking, but fulfilling very different roles. Verse 11 in this same chapter says, "Nevertheless, in the eternal, woman is not independent of man, nor man of woman, for as woman was made from man, that's speaking of Genesis 2, of course, so man is now born of woman, and all things are from God. You see, Paul concludes here by emphasizing that while the husband and wife may not be equal in authority in the home, they are equally important with respect to the roles that they fulfill, the roles that God created them to fulfill. Let's look at one more verse, Revelation 12 and verse 1. From the beginning, of course, you know, and in the next program we'll go through some of those basics from Genesis. God there saying it's not good for the man to be alone. And so he made the helper, he made the complement, he made the supportive companion. And all of this, of course, is modeled after Christ and the church. Paul brings this out in Ephesians 5. But here in Revelation 12 and verse 1, it says, "And there appeared another one, a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars." The woman here, representing the church, pictured as being clothed with the sun. This is what my father had to say about this glorious woman in his booklet, The Royal Book of Revelation. He said she's clothed with the sun, has the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars, all kinds of brilliant light, and it's talking about right now. He said if people can see spiritually, there is a woman out there clothed with the sun, clothed with the Lion of Judah, a type of Jesus Christ. And they have all this light, all this revelation. Everybody should be able to see it. But the Laodiceans are blind. That's the church era mentioned at the last bit of Revelation 3. Those that have fallen away from the truth, those who have rebelled against their husband, Jesus Christ. He says they don't want to see. They refuse to see. But the light is there. The glory is there. And it's out of this world. We're talking about the sun, the moon, and the stars. The royalty God is giving his church. That is royalty like you've never seen before. She's crowned with the 12 stars, those 12 tribes which relate to the throne of David. What royalty! And he's offering these positions to mud, people made of clay. What a future we have! What a future! He says, finally, when the moon's out, especially a full moon, it's so bright, it's almost like daytime. But where does the moon get its light? From the sun. Take away the sun, and the moon is dark, ugly, barren. It's a cold piece of dirt. And then my father says here, that's the way it is with us. Take away the light, and how spiritually dark and barren we get. We're here to reflect God's glory. When we cease to do that, we're in trouble. When we cease to do that, we are in trouble. Now, the marriage institution on the physical plane, it's modeled right after what I just read to you there. Because Jesus Christ is the head, the husband, and the church, or the woman, is the wife. And spiritually speaking, the church is clothed with the Son. It's the work of Jesus Christ that brings that light to the woman that is the church. And you take away that light, and what are you left with? That's what Paul was bringing out there in 1 Corinthians 11. For the man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is in the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. She's there reflecting it, complementing his career, supporting him. Well, there's so many other verses that we could get to, but we just have run out of time. Perhaps, if not tomorrow, later this week, we can continue this study on the God-ordained role for the woman, for the wife, for the mother. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Stephen Fleury bringing you to the end of yet another broadcast of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Send us your emails, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.